Good afternoon, good morning, good day. Welcome back to another episode of RC Stuff, powered by Hobbywing. As always, Charlie Sawanka here with Mr. Mike Chen. And today, we have special guest Mr. Matt Gonzalez back. Mike, Matt, welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Woo!
Well, happy to be here.
Good answers, good answers. So, this week, we are going to talk about our week at the Roar Nationals. I alluded to this kind of on our last episode that we wanted to go through what I'll call a play-by-play or a day-by-day, because it was a pretty fun Nationals for me. It's the first time in a while that I've been there just trying to take pictures and help out and be the voice of reason at times. So that was good for me. So we got a few questions. We got some tech topics that we want to go over today. Power capacitors, wire sizes, battery plugs, one of the most common things that we talk about in tech support and at the racetrack. So we'll go over all of that. And we also have, of course, this week's free winner of the RC stuff, or winner of the free RC stuff. Sorry. We'll get to all of that and much, much more. But first and foremost, Mike has some questions for us that he's going to run us through to guide us through our journey of the Roar Nationals. So, Mr. Chen, what do you got for us?
All right. So, first off, just to clarify, this Roar Nationals recap, this was off-road, on-road, and what kind of... Yeah.
This was the dirt off-road nationals held at Beach RC in South Carolina, I believe.
Beach, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Nice.
And it was cool. It was the Roar Nationals, just to clarify. There's a lot of races that call themselves nationals or championships or whatever. But Roar, if you're not familiar, is the governing body for most of the major races here in North America. And there are league block, if you will, to get us into the IFMAR World Championships as well. So Roar is kind of like the, I don't want to say NASCAR or the NBA, our governing body for racing stuff. They make rules and make everything fair. And they host nationals.
See.
All right. That's good to know. It's like the FIA for Formula One.
Exactly.
All right. So, Matt, how'd the first couple days of the event go? The Wednesday through Thursday, I guess it's open practice?
Yeah. Well, the first day, practice was going well. Everything seemed to be good. We came with our normal setups for timing and gearing, all that fun stuff. Everything was going well. And then disaster struck as soon as we decided to go through tech. Roar decided that
I'm getting messages from Matt during practice that everything is fine. We're clearing all the jumps. The drivers love the power. And go ahead. Go from there.
Everything's going well. We go through tech. And Roar says, no more 1% rule. And as, someone being sent there their first time, to help support a motor like manufacturer, you hear that, and it's not awesome to hear. So we're like, we should be fine like anyway. Most of these staters read way above what the 1% rule was, and I had a couple that were a little in the range of 1%. So I put them all in. I think 10 motors in, I was texting Charlie 911.
Right.
Uh-oh. Wait. Can I take it one step back?
Mm-hmm.
And you explain what the 1% rule is.
So there is a 1%. Hold on.
We got to back up a little farther because some people don't even know what we're talking about yet. At a Roar race in the spec classes, which are stock classes, the motors go through a tech inspection process where they check them for physical dimensions. They meet everything as far as the size goes, and they measure the stator coils with an inductance meter to get a reading off the stator to make sure that matches what that manufacturer submitted to Roar for approval beforehand. Now, this comes in to stop hand winding of spec motors or mismatching of parts of spec motors to kind of make a motor better and keep this class kind of fair so that the idea is that you buy a motor off the shelf and you can go race it against these guys or have the motor man at the event tune it for you. And that's why Matt goes to these races a lot of the time to help our spec motor racers deal with all of this and any sort of nuances with the rules. So as you go through this tech process, like anything in the world, there's a variance. And when they measure these stators, they put them into an incubator oven to get them to a fixed temperature. What is it, 77 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. And they let them sit in there for, I don't know, 15, 30 minutes sometimes. It depends on the different events that you go to, how long it's in there. But they check it with an infrared temp gun to make sure that, you know, surface temperatures are okay. And then they measure them with their meter. And if the number is above the one that's on the sheet that we, you know, that was approved by Roar, motor passes. There has been for years a 1% variance for, there's two parts to the rule. Whatever there's a lowest number that no motor can be below, and then your own number that you submit three motors to Roar, they test them, they approve them, and that becomes your number. You're allowed to have a 1% variance of that at events to accommodate for humidity changes, you know, meter changes, bad clips, old meters, whatever the case may be. They have a 1% variance. And that's always kind of been in place for exactly this reason, to give a little wiggle room so that a customer isn't, I guess you'd say, stuck out to lunch, like his motor won't pass because of the conditions or whatever. And they stopped using that out of nowhere. They just decided, without telling anyone, that we're not doing this rule anymore. So, you know, I catch wind of this. I'm flying in Wednesday. So Matt's been at the track Tuesday night, Wednesday, dealing with all this. When I got there, Matt's, what are you, 22, Matt?
I'm
22. When I got you picked me up. Yeah, when you picked me up, you looked like you were 45. You had aged 20 years in the one day of stressing over all of this. So I'm standing in the airport, and I'm talking to the race announcer guy. He got in the same day I did. We were on the flight, Mike Braun. And Mike's like, hey, how's it going? And he sees me staring at my phone, making funny faces. He's like, what's up? I'm all, Roar decided to remove, and he's part of the Roar management team, to stop using the 1% rule. And they didn't tell anybody. So now I got, you know, a bunch of motors, or we have a bunch of motors that haven't passed. And now I got to go tell the race director guy, or the race official, you can't do that. Like, that's, you can't just take a rule away and disallow all the. And now, to be clear, it wasn't just us. There was several brands with guys going over to tech and all of their motors like, no, none of these pass. I'm like, what are you talking about? So it was kind of a event problem. So I tell this to the announcer guy. And by the time Matt came around in the with Chris to pick me up, he had already got a message from the other Roar guy that they're reinstating the 1% rule and everything's fine. Like, we can re-tech the motors. So they, in the span of time it took for them to DQ a bunch of motors, they're like, realize what was going on. They went back and said, okay, this isn't going to work. And they re-teched all the motors. And we ended up only having like one or two motors not pass after they redid the rules. And other people still, their motors, even with the 1% rule, still would not pass. So it was kind of a sticky situation. And to me, my experience, if I'm wrong and you're listening to this, send me an email, rcstuff@hobbywing.com. Let me know that I'm wrong. But my understanding is the temperature compensation is there to help the number be equal in location to location, but the humidity also has a small effect on this number as well. And when you're dealing with a couple percent one way or the other, that small effect can you know, wreak havoc on things. And the event was very humid. South Carolina, that day when the tech was all happening, it was like really muggy, I guess, was my feeling. It felt crappy at the track. So I think that had a lot to do with it personally, because I know the humidity, the weather conditions all affect these meters, because I've been through this over the years. But it all worked itself out just fine in the end. It just caused Matt some panic for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I'm honest, I kind of enjoyed Matt's panic.
Did you not Instagram this?
No,
we were trying to be professional and not throw anybody under the bus or anything like that. And now that it has all worked out and it was fine and they did the right thing, we have no problem talking about it, because they adjusted and they were. Roar's been doing a fantastic job of late. I will say that the changes they've made. I've been around Roar races for a long time. It's definitely getting better.
So. Yeah, I feel like this was the most structured Roar event in a while.
Yeah, they made a timetable. They stuck to it. You knew exactly when you were up. There was really kind of no delays. The track crew did a good job of keeping the track fairly consistent for what I could tell. You know, when the weather changes, there's only so much you can do to make the track stay the same. So some stuff was out of their hands. But as far as like conditions and all that go, I thought the track was pretty decent.
Nice. Okay, so Matt, well, we're talking about this 1% rule. I guess it's 1% variance in either, I guess in this case, it'd be 1% lower is still acceptable, is what they're talking about. Okay. And that reading is, like I said, some kind of resistance reading of the windings.
Yeah. So we okay. had a.
Oh, the meter that they use is it's an inductance meter, and it powers the coil to check resistance. Is my basic understanding of how this works. Like, it puts power through to measure the resistance. So it's a very, 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 very high end ohm meter, essentially.
Yep. Yeah, because it's based from what I know at that point, I guess, is that it's putting a voltage through and it's checking the voltage drop through that coil. And then whatever from that voltage drop, they can calculate the resistance of said coil.
I want to say it's the number that they give is an inductance number. But again, I'm not sure. I'm not that much of a nerd. I just know the nerd basics.
See. Oh.
If anybody knows the exact answer to this and wants to send us an explanation, rcstuff@hobbywing.com.
Matt knows, but he's going
to
keep
it. I like to nerd out. All right. So sorry to interrupt you with that one. But so you're talking about the 1% rule, and we got through the airport. The rule got changed. Everything's okay.
And so that's Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And then Thursday, we go back for – there's more practice, right?
Yeah. There was more practice, and there was also seating.
Oh, that's right. The practice that counts. I always forget about the practice
so
that counts.
So we had 1 hour or a couple hours of open practice again. We had to then try to figure out – you know, as being a driver and then sitting behind the scenes and doing this, it can be a little bit of a head game, especially when – you know, you have these motors that you feel like you can clear like the jump with, and then you have to run like something else, and all of a sudden you can't clear like the jump. You think, you know, the first thing as a driver, you think, oh, it's my equipment. It's this, it's that. It's never anything else. And come Saturday, we learned that it was not
Hold
the
on.
Equipment.
You're fast forwarding.
Oh, no.
So let me just one with this, because this is something that's important. These numbers that are on these stators, we had a couple dozen of these stators ahead of time for the race so that we could prepare, make sure that we could go through the motors, build the motors ahead of time, and not be scrambling at the track. So once this situation started to happen where certain stators weren't passing, we had to use what was essentially a higher number stator, like the inductance reading was higher. And in your head, if the rule says that lower is better, and you can't be below the number, that's it firms up that the lower number is going to be better. So you're sure in your head that you want the lowest inductance number stator. And when you can't run that stator all of a sudden, and there seems to be a power problem, you're like, oh, God, it must be the stator. And to me, like, we had all of the numbers from all of the stators, from the best stator to the worst stator. We did the math. It was a 1.39% variance. And these guys are trying to tell me that this 1.39% variance in an inductance reading is making the cars drastically slower than they used to be. I almost had to shake the baby and be like, dude, that's not it. It's something else. Like, well, let's just keep plugging away. This is all stuff that, according to everything, I was upset. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was, like, having a moment. I had to go outside and, like, calm down and come back and talk to him. Like, listen, you did all your homework. You have to trust yourself. I didn't say it like this. I said it much worse. But you got to know that you've done all of this already, and something else is going on. So we get through Thursday seating. Mm-hmm. The inconsistencies were real. Well, here, this is the other thing. We were not the only people that were having these inconsistency problems. There was like one or two drivers that could make the big jump the whole time, and then everybody else could do it for like 3 to 4 minutes, and they all kind of struggle or just barely come up short on this triple. So it was like this kind of widespread mentality that everyone was having fade problems. Like, they would run out of power towards the end of the run. I'm like, well, yeah, it's electric. That'll happen. And they're all like, why can this one guy do the triple the whole time? And me, standing on the side, being the grumpy old man, looking at the cars all day long, like, he's driving better than you guys. So they all got together, and they're all watching this guy drive, and then they convinced themselves that he wasn't driving better, that they were doing that. And I'm looking at this. I'm like, this is not what's going on here at all, boys. So we get through Thursday, and I would say spirits were not high based off of practice. They everybody seeded pretty well into the top 10, stuff like that. It wasn't that big of a deal to me. I was just like waiting for the consistency to come back. So it was I guess you'd say a sad start when I got there, because everything was great until I got off the plane and then I got all these messages. The whole world was ending.
Gotta learn how to do a handstand.
It was definitely an emotional roller coaster for sure the first like few days. Come Friday, Chase had top seeded 13.5 four wheel, which was awesome. Everything was going well.
Two wheel drive was fast. They just had not clean runs.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they got crashed basically. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily power related.
No,
it was crashes.
Yeah. It wasn't clean runs. So, the first round of qualifying went to, I think it was Chase got a 5 in two wheel and then Chase got a 3 in four wheel and Levi got a 2. So, leaving the track the first day, things were going pretty good, I felt.
Well, here, to back up for a second, this is most of these conversations that we're having with this power thing were stemming from the two-wheel drive program.
Yes.
17.5 two-wheel drive, there's a big jump that was hard to make if everything wasn't just perfect.
Yeah.
13.5 four-wheel drive?
Yes.
We were so fast that the Roar guy came over to check on us a few times to make sure we weren't dicking around in practice, screwing with people, making sure we were running legal stuff.
Yeah.
And
made sure we had the right software.
In the pits, he's making them show us the settings so there's nothing secret in there. Like, these guys were so fast in 13.5. It looked like they were
cheating. There was a fence that you could jump. Well, you could jump until Chase and Seating was jumping over it the whole time. And he was cutting the track pretty big.
It was a big corner.
Everything was going well. And then his brother did it the first round of qualifying. And all you hear on like the mic is car 4 warning.
Warning for cutting the track.
And he just starts like laughing on the driver's stand. And he just stopped like cutting it like after that. But still, our stuff was so good that we were jumping the fence.
In
13.5 four wheel. And we were the only guys running like little batteries. Everyone else had like the big style like LiPo like batteries in their cars. And I think we were the only guys who had the little ones, but still had the power at the end of like the run to do all the jumps. No problem.
Good times.
See.
Nice. All right. So that's qualifying on Friday, mm-hmm. right? All right. So qualifying went into Saturday. Am I correct?
Yep. So there was two more rounds on Saturday. Friday, like that night, we were still a little off pace in two wheel. And Charlie was probably tired of hearing it. So we came back to the room. And he's had this idea for quite a while, but I never really understood it until he showed it to me in person. But we've been calling it the Tuna Dino, and I think Charlie can further explain more of what's going on.
There's a playlist on our YouTube channel of me doing bench tests with the Tunalyzer of a bunch of motors and talking about what all those numbers mean. So that'll help you get up to speed. But basically what we did is we left the motor installed into a car with no other electronics. It was just a drivetrain. The transmission, spur gear, pinion gear, with a set of wheels and tires on the back of it to generate a little bit of load on the motor. And then we would run the auto test of that motor through the Tunalyzer while it was under load. And it provides a loaded test for the motor. And the closer you can get a motor to the same RPM amp draw, that's going to simulate the load that it sees in the car. So you can use like a data log to compare that and get the numbers to match. So that was a bit more than what we had time for. So we just did this on a bench with a drivetrain to get a little bit of load on the motor. Normally, I think they run under no load at like 2 or 3 amps. Under this, it did, I want to say, 5 or 6 amps type of deal. So we nearly doubled the no load that was on there. And I told Matt, set up a motor in this thing geared exactly like it's good at home. And then we're going to make all the other cars make these same numbers. And I came up with this thing years ago, and I talk about this in the videos, of RPM per amp or KV per amp. The more RPM you get for a given amp draw is going to give you a factor. So I divide the RPM by the amp, and that gives me an RPM by amp, per amp number. And this is a now... To be very clear, the engineers told me this is a trash number. Don't use it. It's not accurate. I agree. It's not accurate under no load because it varies so much. But comparing two motors under a very, very similar load, this number will tell you a lot about what's going on to get those two setups to run similar. So we do this, and we come up with, it was like a, what do we call it? The Magic Charlie number?
Yeah, the Magic Charlie number.
We made a spreadsheet. We're plugging numbers in there. Matt's got all this stuff that he wants to try, more timing, less gearing. So we run through a bunch of these scenarios. We log all of it, and we compare the magic number across the board. And we go off the next day. This is Saturday morning of practice. Mm-hmm. There's a Saturday morning practice session. Matt's got everybody with OTAs in there watching live data while they drive around the track. I'm laughing because I'm like, you don't even know what you're looking at, but it's fine. But it was a good show of force that we're getting a bunch of stuff done here. Everybody was very impressed. Come back, look through the numbers. And while this is all happening, we're going through a bunch of stuff. Wire sizes, maybe the speed control's fading, maybe we got bad plugs, maybe we've used up all the battery packs. And then someone's like, well, maybe we're just spinning tires. So it feels like it's losing power, but it's just doing a burnout the whole time.
Yeah.
So they go and they sauce their tires different, and they're jumping to flats all of a sudden. Like, before, barely make the triple, now they're jumping to the flat. I'm like, oh, you guys are all fired. However, the Tunalyzer dyno made it able to be able to sit and set the cars exactly, all of the cars, exactly how we want them, go out confidently for the first round and know that this was going to be dialed. They cleared the triple the whole run. Like, it was fantastic. I'm like, all right. This is what a factory race team is supposed to kind of... I mean, we should have done this on day one, but at least we salvaged something before qualifying was over. But, you know, it was a good learning experience by all, I think.
Yeah.
And this is 17.5 two-wheel drive, right?
Yeah. Oh, 13.5 was...
Come on. 17.5 two-wheel drive. Traction's always your problem.
Well, you see...
You would think not, though. The track was pretty high bite. The sauce game was pretty on point, and you couldn't noticeably hear or see the cars doing anything that would make you think they didn't have bite. I'll say that. Like, I didn't
normally you can feel it or hear it. Like, when you come up like the jump, you can hear the tire like slip and then grip. You couldn't see or hear it. So right. We thought everything was fine. Going into Saturday, we did all this, and then bam, we're overshooting the jump by a mile.
I was laughing out loud because I would walk on the other side of the track to watch the landing. I'm like, oh my god! So that was good, valuable. We now we know we can trust our program. Matt spent weeks ahead of time finding the gear timing setup for this, so we had really nothing to worry about. Like you had just a little bit of timing, maybe a little bit of pinion for the various track sizes, or if there's obstacles, I guess, that you need to deal with differently, short shoots, long, you know, straightaways, that sort of thing. So. It was good science.
Yeah.
Cool.
So in the end, qualifying went decent Saturday. Four-wheel drive, it was great, and two-wheel drive came around. It was a little rough on the kids because there was a lot of and Kai, for that matter, because they had bad runs on Friday. And in these road races, they do qual points. So you every round, there's four rounds. Where you finish in that round gets you points. First gets a zero, second gets a one or a two, something like that. And it goes all the way down the list, and then the next round, that all starts over. Lowest points get you into the main. So they take your best three out of four, I think. You get one throw out. So they went into Saturday having to do two really good runs, and that doesn't always work out in spec class racing because everybody has that situation. There was some crashing. So, but Kai ended up putting it ninth on the grid for two-wheel drive, and yep. Kai Goff from Florida, and Chase, right?
Mm-hmm. No. Chase qualified second, and Levi qualified fourth in four wheel. Right. And then, in two wheel, Levi did not make the main for the fourth year in a row. And Chase qualified 7th?
5th. No, he finished 5th, qualified 7th. Yeah. You're right. Now, Chase and Levi are 13 years old, just in case you guys didn't know. And Kai is the oldest guy, I think, in the spec main at 30-something. So there's a wide range of ages here. So,
all right. Got to love it, man. So that pretty much sums up all of qualifying, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to the main event. Main's Day. What are the highlights?
Oh, boy. Well, first main, the biggest highlight, I think, of A1 of Stock Buggy was Chase clearing the jump the whole run. I think I sat there and watched the timer go down, and I'm like, okay, still doing it. And it wasn't like he was buttering the line every time either. He bobbled a couple times before the tabletop and still cleared it. And I was pretty stoked with that, all the work that Charlie did. In a hotel room like that night, definitely like paid off.
He's giving me far too much credit. I basically just made fun of Matt for not doing this before we went there and made him remember all the things I did. Anyway, but that's besides the point.
But yeah, that was super helpful. A1 of four wheel. Levi, 4th on like the grid, comes out, wins A1, and it was pretty good. We had some good momentum heading into A2. And was excited for the rest of the day for sure.
Didn't Chase win A2?
Of a four-wheel?
Four-wheel, yeah.
Well, yes. Chase was the winner of A2 of 13.5 four-wheel.
So the twin brothers, these brothers are twins, Chase and Levi. And they're not TQ, second and fourth on the grid, which is tricky. There was some bad luck from the guys in front of them. Sutherland had a heartbreaker. I think a screw fell out one round and another round. It was like I forget what it was exactly, but he had two breaks, and so that was a tough break on him. I thought that Sutherland was going to be the stealer of our 13.5 national title for sure. Like, he looked very confident. He looked like his game was on, but it worked out. And then was it A2 with the drama?
The crash. It was A2. Levi had it. Just had to go around one more corner, and then decided.
Car crashes.
There was a lap car like that crashed in front of him.
Yeah.
And he tried to dodge it. And because of that, he blew like the line, allowed Chase to sneak in. And him and like Jermaine dragged each other across like the straightaway.
Right. They made contact and crashed across the line together. And there was like a scoring drama situation that the computer showed different than what the videos were showing. And people were pointing this out to Roar. Roar looks at it, and they're like, they watched the replay that the Live RC guys had, and the guy goes, I think his comment was, well, we can't tell, so we're going to leave it as scoring stands. I'm like, you can't tell. Look at my video. You can see that Chase gets pushed across the line. Like, he's in front of the car that's pushing him. Like, he should get the position. So the Roar guy's like, all right, we'll review this and check it out. Well, the kid who was given second and is getting this reverse down to third, Jermaine, was in the top running here for the podium. And Jermaine come from like 8th on the grid, something like that. The kid was on fire on main day. So the dad was pretty fired up about this. He got with Roar, tried to file a protest that like this was all going on. He got really mad at me. Like, I was the one filing the protest. And it wasn't me. Like, it was Associated's own team manager and the J Concepts guys that brought this to the attention. I just happened to be the guy who had another video to share with Roar to be like, hey, man, this is pretty clearly a car getting pushed across the line. So they ended up reversing it and giving Chase the second place finish, and they gave Jermaine third. And, you know, that's kind of how they ended up finishing the day. Levi ends up winning four-wheel drive. Chase gets second kind of because of that decision, because of how it went down in the third main.
Yeah.
And then Jermaine ended up in third overall. So still got a podium, but he could have got a second place and broke up our sweep. But, no, I mean, I felt bad. I've been to races before, and I've had to do protests or things or talk to the officials about what happened on the track, because in their defense, it's the heat of the moment. They don't see it. And certainly, I'm biased. I want our guys to do well at all of the races, but I also want the outcome to be correct. And, you know, you got to look at it from everybody's point of view. Coming from Jermaine's dad's point of view, I would have been upset as well. Would I have yelled at the company representative that just happened to be standing in the wrong place at the wrong time? I probably would not have, but I've been around this a little longer, maybe. I don't know. But no bad blood with me and Jermaine's dad. If you listen to this, I know how it is, man. No sweat. But I just walked away and said, hey, man, sorry you feel that way.
Oh, Charlie.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, and then Spencer, I mean, we talk a lot about the modified guys, the stock situation, but the modified guys, Spencer was on fire. Yep. I thought that Aiden Horn was going to sweep this Nationals, his associated teammate. Aiden runs for Reedy. And I'm like, man, this is going to be a rough one for us. There's a couple guys that don't run Hobbywings stuff that are really locked in this weekend. But Spencer ended up TQ in a class, winning a class, qualifying second, winning a class, and then finishing second in truck as well. So he won. He TQ'd in one two-wheel drive buggy. No, four-wheel drive buggy. He qualified second and won two-wheel drive mod buggy. And I think he qualified second and finished second in modified truck, too. So if he didn't win, he got second place. So hats off to Spencer. Killer weekend.
Yep.
We posted pictures and setup sheets for all this stuff. And we have a new press release in the works right now that'll encompass all of this with the tunalizer outputs, you know, to show you the motor settings and the gearing and all that stuff. So a very fantastic main day for me because we had lots of wins. I got to go take pictures of dudes on top of the podium. I always love that. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know what? Matt, what was your favorite part of Nats?
My favorite part? It's probably Levi winning 13.5 4L. Me and him went to the track a lot prior to the event, and we didn't really run 4L, which is funny. We ran a lot of 2L. Both him and his brother constantly put in work weekend and week out. So I'm super pumped like for both of them. Chase won a title a couple of years ago at 12, right? And finished second overall in 13.5 4L, which is not his class at all for like the most part. So being able to work with these kids, a lot of people might not know, but their dad pretty much gave me like sanctuary a couple of years ago. And I'm super thankful for, you know, them kind of being there like for me, like when I needed it. And yeah, it's been a fun journey. I'm excited for what else like comes of it.
Matt lives in their backyard, if you guys didn't know.
In a tent.
All right, Charlie, what was your favorite part?
The lucky hat, I think. We were sitting around in the pits talking about stuff on like superstitions and all that. And Chase had been wearing this Jay Concepts hat. That's how I could tell the two of them apart all weekend, because one had a hat on, one didn't. I look at Levi, I'm like, Levi, I have some brand new hats in this bag. I've been to places, might be worth trying the brand new hat on. So he does. Things started to go our way. He kept wearing the hat. He won the Nationals with the hat. So lucky hat, jokingly, one of my favorite parts. But obviously, seeing these guys do well and win, seeing the big teary-eyed hugs between the dad and the mom and the kids and Matt and everybody, that stuff just gets you right in the heartstrings every time. And we had really good dinners every night, hanging out, having good times, some pro tips. Yeah, the pro tips with everybody was fantastic. So I don't know. The whole Nats experience was pretty good. I think that the Raymonds are an awesome family. I can't say enough things nice about Chris and his lovely wife, Mrs. Raymond. They put up with a lot dealing with Matt, kind of coaching these two teenagers and these two young kids that are very emotional, dedicated racers and all the stuff they have to go through there. Having one teenage son racing is a lot of work. To have two of them and their barely older brother tending to them as well, it's a lot. So hats off to Chris for not murdering all of us that weekend. So good on you, sir.
Beautiful. Well, I think that sums up our mains part.
Yeah, good Nats overall. Anything?
Yeah.
Love it. All right. There is one tech tip that I'm kind of excited to talk about, Charlie.
Ooh, I tell us. I think I know what it is because you and I have been talking about it.
Yeah, it's receiver capacitors. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm excited about.
Matt and I had this come up at Cleveland, actually. One of the first races that we went to, the receiver capacitors came into play. Now, Matt, Mike, you tell the people. I talk too much on these shows. You tell them. You already know.
Okay. So something that the actually this has been used quite a bit in the RC flights, so like fixed wing airplanes, helicopters, because their servos are constantly they're always running high volt, high torque servos, and their servos are basically under constant load all the time. And from what I understand about it is that the servos being under load tends to send this electrical feedback back to the BEC system. And the way to kind of smooth that feedback out so you're not getting these little spikes going back to the BEC circuit is by installing a capacitor onto the receiver. And it looks like a lot of the plane guys they're running the standard that they tend to run. And the heli guys as well would be the 10 volt 4700 microfarad capacitor, and simply just plugged in either with a Y cable or plugged in directly to their receiver to a vacant channel, and that seems to resolve a lot of these issues. So.
If you're old like me, you may think this sounds like a glitch buster. And
Right.
that's essentially what it is. The old glitch busters were a similar thing to this, but they were just lower performance capacitors. These you want to use basically a low ESR capacitor like we use on a speed control for the most part, because they have to do all of this stuff very, very fast in order to be effective. And basically, it looks like a power capacitor with a servo plug on the end of it. You plug it into one of the open slots on the receiver. Like Mike said, if you don't have an open slot, just get a Y harness and you can, plug the servo in, plug the other end of the cap into the Y harness, and away you go. So they've been around for years. We've been using them in RC cars for many moons. If you're a racer and occasionally your transponder seems like it browns out because there's a sweeper before start finish or whatever, power capacitor in the receiver will help deal with that. If you're doing runs and it feels like your servo slows down over the duration of the run or gets weaker steering, receiver capacitor can help a lot with that as well. If you just want to be safe and provide your BEC protection, provide your electronics protection, run a power capacitor in your receiver. They're not going to hurt anything, and they're only going to make your electronics do their jobs easier. So I'm a big fan. That's all I
Yeah,
got.
I want to figure a way how to scientifically prove this, because I like looking at numbers.
So that we've done this over the years. You put your car in the air, you rack your servo back and forth, and then you plug the power capacitor in and listen to how much faster it goes with the power capacitor in there. Same thing, you'll see temperature changes in the receiver wires, actually. The BEC is doing less work, so you'll get cooler temperatures on your receiver wires if they start to heat up. Because today, servos are probably easily in the 10 amp range. And you know what hasn't changed? The little plugs that we use. Those guys are still only really rated for 4 or 5 amps. So you do the math there. Stuff starts to add up pretty quick, and you can get some hot spots in your wiring.
That's, yeah, I like that. I'm gonna have to play around with that. I gotta go find my temp gun. Well, is it that time?
Ooh. The time for the real reason that people listen to RC stuff powered by Hobbywing.
Yeah,
The
maybe.
free RC stuff.
Free stuff.
This
Ooh,
one,
okay.
before we get into that, you may be tuning in to find out how to win the free RC stuff. Matt, you know how to enter to win the free RC stuff?
I do.
Read my mind, Charlie.
Tell them how, Matt.
Well, you can listen to these like podcasts, and then you can send an email in with questions to RC stuff, correct?
It's rcstuff
Oh,
at hobbywing.com. You're going to include your name, your address, your phone number, type out your email, include your shirt size. That's the bare minimum. We like it if you tell us what kind of RC stuff you're into, maybe how you got into RC, if you're making a comeback. Some cool RC stories. I love that stuff. And if you've got any questions, comments, or concerns, either about Hobbywing product, you got a guest that you would like us to invite onto the show, anything along the lines that pertains to RC stuff, you can let us know in that email. And much like this week's winner from Ithaca, Michigan, we'll start with his questions because these are pretty good questions. This pertains to some of the stuff we were talking about today, actually. His first question, with some of his XR10 Pro Elite ESCs, if he's running an aftermarket fan on his motor and it's plugged into the receiver, the on-off switch doesn't want to function. The speed control won't turn off. It'll just stay on. But if the fan is plugged into the ESC's programming port, turns on and off just fine. This happens because the BEC power runs through the on and off switch. And if there's too much drain, it overloads the mechanism and it can't turn off. How far or close the fan is to the switch has an effect on that. Now, this is the first time I've had it reported this way.
Yes.
I typically get it reported the other way, that if the aftermarket fan is plugged into the programming port, it makes the speaker, you can turn the speaker control on, but it won't turn off. You have to unplug it, which is fine. You know, mostly that's not a big deal. Folks unplug a battery and away they go. But I've not heard it plugged into the receiver that way. So you may have something else going on with either the length of the wire, the condition of the plug on the receiver itself, if those pins are bent, or maybe the receiver's got some dirt inside of it. If you guys have ever taken apart your receiver, you'll find a handful of dirt in there 9 times out of 10 if you're an off-road racer. So it's worth checking out.
A handful? I think a little more than a handful sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So that aftermarket fans draw a ton of power. They basically overload the switch and make it so that it doesn't work. From my experience, when I run into this, it's like I said, it's usually when it's plugged into that port on the speed control. We plug it into the receiver, the problem goes away. But the pro tip here, a lot of folks solder on a small JST plug onto the battery leads of the speed control, right where the power cap goes on. You can solder on a little JST lead and just plug your motor fan directly into that. And it does a couple things. Takes away all the load off the BEC, so that's good. Gives the battery or the fan more voltage, so it runs at the battery voltage, not the BEC voltage. And it allows the fan to stay running after you turn the car off when you're in tech. So like end of the race, you got to go out and turn marshal. You turn the car off, turn your radio off, but the fan will keep running on your motor to get that post-race cool down so you don't get the heat soak that we've talked about before. So I'm a big fan of the extra fans being soldered onto the little, you know, the battery leads of the speed control itself. So we do a lot. Most of our team drivers, that's how we ask them to set up their motor fans, because it does make a pretty big difference on airflow. Yes. And longevity of the motors. And then our winner had a second question. He's posted this question on the Hobbywing North America Facebook page. When will there be an update to the Tunalyzer to allow Bluetooth printing? I was hoping that the soon-to-be-released program box, this email came in before that G3 box came out, would have the ability to do a pass-through for the Tunalyzer to the Bluetooth printer. Now, I fully appreciate the printer situation, and I wish that I had a better answer than maybe. But from the last couple conversations that I had with the engineering department about updates for the Tunalyzer, it's going to be a minute before we're able to do a printer update for a couple different reasons that I don't understand. But sadly, nothing on the near horizon for a Bluetooth printer, but they haven't said no yet. So there's still hope. That's where I'll leave that one.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And he says, as always... Hobbywing products rock, and they keep me on the podium. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much, sir. And he probably knows who it is because these are his questions. So from Ithaca, Michigan, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for this week's winner, Troy Turner.
Woo.
Congratulations, Troy. Keep an eye on your email box. If you don't have it by the time you listen to this episode, you'll get it within a day or two. Sometimes we get a little backlog with getting the good news out, but we will be in touch. Don't worry.
See.
I think that's all of my topics. Mike, you got anything else for us?
James is still fast.
I like that. Matt, you got anything for us?
I think everything's pretty good. The tuna dyno, I think we should do a video here soon.
How awesome. I'm sending you guys white lab coats and goggles.
I'm telling you.
Big nerdy
one. The picture of Brennan and his brother from Step Brothers. Put in the liquid paper on like the bee with Charlie and I's faces on it would be perfect for the next tech support announcement.
Oh, I'm going to meme that. I'm going to meme that.
I got to hang out with Mad Max a couple weeks ago in Bakersfield for the like the one up West Coast like invite race, doing some testing for the IFMAR Worlds in spec, and we use the like the tuna dyno in touring car to see if the math and the magic number added up correctly. And to my surprise, the magic number, as long as it's in whatever we tested it at, the magic number that we seem to find is between 5.2 to 5.7. Max's touring car was right on the dot. And the best part of it is that that's where it ran the best and had the most amount of power. So,
and this is that it's a KV. You take the KV and you divide that by the amp draw that it shows, and that'll give you this magic number. And we do this, like I said, with the motor installed in the car. You try to do it with the speed control disconnected, just for safety. But we've done it with the speed control connected as well. It's just it's not as safe. But anyway, but we're gonna do a video on that and talk all about that and show some more folks that sort of tech, because it's turned out to be pretty helpful on many occasions. I'd say every other day since Matt started doing this, I get another story from him on my text about how awesome it worked and how he got somebody going fast again. So there's science, folks. So.
Science.
But I think on that note, we'll bring this one to a close. As always, folks, thanks for tuning in. Another episode of RC Stuff powered by Hobbywing. We will see you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
It's my line. Stop.